Hello, hello.
Hello.
I'm Megan.
I'm Matt.
And you're listening to The Night Owl. It's a cold fall night tonight, isn't it?
Cool.
Oh, it's cold. It's straight up cold. 37 degrees outside tonight, guys. And yeah, but we are toasty and warm inside. We have our little kitty cat. It's Sunday, so it's kind of a chill day. And I know we normally do our recordings every other Saturday, but at least we have it every other week. We did have our live recording on Saturday, so it was Saturday Night Live instead of Friday Night Live. Don't copyright us, SNL. We are actually in our fourth season today, so cheers on that.
Cheers there.
And we are only in our fourth season because during the quarantine, Matthew and I recorded our podcast on Anchor, like 4 days a week, and then once we started kind of getting back into our work groove, it kind of scaled back to 3 to 2 nights a week. And then since we've been doing our live videos, we have been just doing audio every other week. And you guys should check out our older videos on YouTube, The Night Owl Chicago, where we do our Zoom chats with guests. And I think we're going to bring some more guests this winter, because, you know, once the snow hits, we're going to be inside more, and we're probably going to either catch up with old guests or bring in new people. Most of them will just be friends of ours and probably family. I have a cousin that really wants to be on the show, so it'll be cool to bring her in and get a young person's perspective on the world, because Matthew and I are old people, and we're like Gen Z. No, we're not Gen Z. We're millennial, and what are you, Gen X? Are you Gen X?
A mystery.
Yeah, he's not a mystery. But we're like 30s and 40s, so I feel like people in their 20s see the world a little differently than we do, because, you know, all this crazy stuff with just the politics that's been going on, and BLM, and, you know, just everything. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world today, but, you know, I think we just ignore that when we're all younger because we focus on our friends and our sports and our extracurricular activities, whatever it is that we were interested in as teenagers, that we just, you know, we didn't really focus on politics and socioeconomic issues. And I think now the world is coming to this halt where the quarantine made everyone just kind of stand still and focus on themselves and, you know, local things, and just really open their eyes. So today I want to bring a topic. It's going to be a little dark. I know yesterday when we did our live Facebook video, we did, you know, more cheery stuff. And so Matthew and I are going to do some dark topics today. So if you guys are new, I'm Megan.
I'm Matt.
And this is The Night Owl Chicago, an all-inclusive podcast that talks about music, art, and life, and everything in between. So if you guys are not new, thank you for coming back. Thank you for supporting us. We are on almost all platforms. I think I'm going to put us on Twitter soon. I told myself I would never do it, but, you know, when you tweet, people actually notice a little bit more than when you're on Facebook, because the Facebook algorithm, if you ask me, is fucked up. And Instagram is, because now it's owned by Facebook. So only a certain amount of people see your content. So what I do to cheat the algorithm is I go in my search box on Instagram, and I start liking stuff on pages, profiles that are not on my friends list. And sometimes I just go through my friends list and start liking random stuff, because that's how you get them to notice you. So it is a lot of work, but it helps, and it screws up the algorithm. So screw you, Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
I know that we had talked about Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry, both of whom are dead. And it's sad because Brian, obviously, I think people were really looking to catch him and kind of get his perspective and on what happened. We all know now that she was strangled, so that is definitely a crime of passion. It's not an accidental death. And, you know, if she had fallen or had a head wound or something like that, or left behind and starved, like, those are kind of accidental. But at the same time, when you strangle someone, it's like, yeah, there's no, yeah, it was not an accident. It was definitely not an accident. So the fact that he died was crazy to me, because in my head I was like, he probably is dead or he has really smart friends that have kept him away from, kept him from getting caught. But what? We've had so much manpower trying to look for him in several states, and he was just right there. He was a couple miles from home, right? That's where his stuff ended up in his remains. So, and at first, like, my friend and I were having conspiracy brain because we were like, oh, maybe he planted, some bones there and stuff, and it's not really him. Maybe he really is, somewhere else. But that was all speculation. I know that was on TikTok. It was really popular. People were trying to make it true. But no, he's really gone. But that actually sparked an interest in me. And since they found her remains, they've been finding all these other bodies, right, in the same park and other local parks. So I found this website, NBCMiami.com. Of course, they're going to, it's going to be a Florida website because they lived in Florida before they went on their trip. This says Gabby Petito's death highlights cold case mysteries at national parks. So several murders and disappearances in national parks remained unsolved. So this article is from September 22nd, but it is from this year. I couldn't find anything really current from this month, but I think it's okay. I think it's safe to say that we can say this is the most recent. So it says the Gabby Petito case is the latest in a long line of mysterious deaths, disappearances, and murders that have occurred in national parks around the U.S. And then we know that, we found her skeletal remains. They also identified her fiance, who was reported missing as well. So we kind of know what they did. They went, they traveled west to Oregon. They plan on visiting several national parks along the way. Just two of the tens of millions of travelers who visited the country's 63 parks each year. While most park visits are danger-free, according to a dashboard from the National Park Service that analyzed deaths in parks from 2014 to 2016, there were about 6 deaths per week, Matthew, in national parks, or an average of 330 per year. The park mortality rate is about 1 death for every million visitors, which isn't a lot. Now, there are people who die at parks, accidental deaths, and then there are bodies that are found at parks that are just dumped there.
People trying to take selfies and fall into the, the hot springs or something like that.
Yeah, or off a cliff.
Yeah, off a cliff.
Yeah, that's why they have the timer on your camera, so you could, press the 10-second timer. Do not do selfies by a cliff. The dashboard said that 53% of deaths in the parks were due to unintentional cases, including falls, car crashes, and drownings. Of the intentional deaths, about 95% were suicides, according to the National Park Service. The Park Service doesn't appear to have more recent death figures, and the dashboard doesn't say how many of the unintentional deaths are homicides. But the NPS does keep a webpage dedicated to cold cases in parks, including unsolved murders and other unexplained disappearances and deaths. So one of the cases that they had they're talking about here, and I think I've actually heard of this case. It's the double murder at Shenandoah. I don't know if you heard of that case. Perhaps the most infamous national parks homicide involves the killings of Julianne Williams and Laura Winans, who were found murdered at the campsite at Shenandoah National Park in Virginia on June 1st, 1996. Williams, who was 24 at the time, and Winans, who was 26, had been last seen with a golden retriever on May 24th. I think they did find the golden retriever, and he was very malnourished. But they were friends, and they traveled together to that park. And, they didn't have cell phones. It's not like they could, ping where maybe they were taken or what happened or who was near them. The women's bodies were discovered by searchers after the dog was spotted wandering alone on a hiking trail. Media reports at the time said that they had been tied up and had their throats slashed. The FBI and National Park Services are still investigating the murder. So that's from 1996.
Yeah, there are people that disappear along the Appalachian.
And I remember there was no disclaimer. Here's the disclaimer. There was no evidence of rape or sexual assault. It was either a ritual killing or it was just something sadistic because they were tied up and then slashed. There was no other signs of, of assault on them. Another case is boy vanishes at Crater Lake. Crater Lake has been known to be very, paranormal. Because it's it used to be like very sacred Native American land. So there are like, this is one of those cases that was very bizarre. It said one of the more unusual unsolved disappearances at the national park is the case of 8-year-old Samuel Belki, who vanished on October 14, 2006, while on a trip to Crater Lake National Park in Oregon with his father. A massive search was initiated, but no trace of the boy was ever found. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children later released an age-progressed image of what Bogey might look like at age 19. So I'll put this link in the description so you guys can see the picture. The fact that they can do technology like that
Yeah, they've got that. Building advanced people.
Yeah, and they didn't start doing that till like the early 2000s. They did that when kids would go missing. They're like, oh, this is what they would look like now if they were of age. Homicide at Hawaii Volcanoes. Hawaii Volcanoes National Park may be one of the premier spots in the country to view active volcanoes, but on April 13, 2005, it was the scene of a murder. On that date, the body of Armand Johnson was found by a park visitor near Kuaku Ranch, close to the park's southern boundary. Johnson, who was 44 years old at the time he was killed, had moved to Big Island from Seattle, Washington in 1984 and hosted a local radio show. Though the suspect and motive remain unknown, authorities said evidence indicates Johnson suffered a single gunshot wound to his upper back and neck. So they were obviously behind him when they shot him or he was running. Investigators believe the murder, which remains unsolved, took place where the body was found. So that's good. He wasn't dumped there. He was killed there, so they could still try to figure out why he was there, who he was talking to last, who knew him, that, you know, if he had any enemies. I mean, don't you love in shows where they're like, do you know anyone that could want to kill them or hurt them? And they're like, no, they're great. No one, everyone loved him. And it's like, someone obviously didn't, because he's dead, or they're dead, right?
They're dead.
Murdered Jane Doe found at Yosemite. Yosemite National Park in California also became the scene of a murder investigation in the spring of 1983 after the partial remains of a homicide victim were found in the park's Summit Meadow along Glacier Point Road. Forensic anthropologists believe that the victim was at least in her teens, but could have been as old as 30. Authorities said that the suspect in the case, Henry Lee Lucas, was interviewed in the 1980s and died in prison in 2001. He had information about the murder and that had not been made public and could only be known by the person who committed the crime. I mean, unless he was friends with the person that did it. It sounds like he was the one that did it. So it says Lucas had stated that the victim was a female hitchhiker that he picked up on Highway 41 between Fresno, California, and Yosemite in the early 1980s. The woman's remains have never been identified, and she is only known as Jane Doe. Lucas was convicted of murdering 11 people, while some of the killings were later disputed. Here's the last one. It says, Chiricahua Ranger disappears. Chiricahua Ranger. The last time anyone saw Paul Braxton Fugate, a ranger at Chiricahua National Monument in Arizona, was January 13, 1980, when the 41-year-old went for a hike and disappeared. Fugate, who had been working in the monument's visiting center, left the building to hike the park trail and was never seen again. Although search teams combed the surrounding areas extensively multiple times, they found no sign of the missing ranger. Investigators suspected foul play early on and had a formal missing person case remains open. So it says the National Park Service still has a $60,000 reward for information, because he's a ranger. So I don't know.
Still out there.
What if he was like the most skilled one? That's why no one could find him. I mean, don't you think animals just kind of like do the rest? When people are like in wooded areas and stuff.
That's why it makes it difficult if they do. But sometimes even then they can still find something, remains.
At least a skeleton or like a skull or something.
Clothing or something.
Yeah.
What you got? What you another watching?
What you watching segment?
So I won't get into too much because I know you haven't seen this, but this is a recent movie here released out on Netflix, right, called The Harder They Fall. I thought I'd wrote down the
you know what you want to say.
I write down the director's
I can find the director.
It's basically it's a spaghetti western, so it's set in that time period, so somewhere between, you know, 1900 and the end of the Civil War. It is about cowboys and outlaws and
James Samuel.
So James, that's the director. Sam, there we go.
I think he also scored the music too.
So I love the soundtrack to it. You know, it's pretty much an all black ensemble. It is about and includes historic, you know, black Americans. Mm-hmm. It is a fictional story, so
it's not a biopic.
It's not a biopic, no. So, I mean, again, I thought it was a very action-packed, really loved the soundtrack, kind of loved the cinematography and the shots in it. And really, you could see they did things with purpose there, from towns trying to show you kind of certain things into one town from the next. And, you know, it's definitely a rated R movie, especially it does, you know, kind of what we had talked about yesterday, as far as Red Notice. There may have been a lot of shots, but no one was hit and no one died. That is definitely not the case in this. Plus, they do set it up for the end to appear that there could be a sequel. Especially since one of the actresses in this, Regina King, I would say her character is not necessarily, or maybe a composite, but maybe has the capability then to be able to maybe do a sequel.
That would be cool. I would love to see the sequel. I would love to see that. And I mean, I was saying, as soon as I saw this movie, I mean, I saw it twice, because I saw it once with another friend and then once with Matthew. And I think I'm not comparing, because I'm not trying to lump in directors. And I know that I think for the past year, I've been following directors more than I've been following actors, because actors are in almost every movie now, whereas directors, you can follow them because they're consistently making, you know, their own art, and some of them have a hand in cast. They do pick certain actors to be in their movies, and sometimes they write movies or shows for those actors because they have a good relationship. But I think it is very similar to Quentin Tarantino, where the editing and the writing is very intellectual. The credits are very similar, where they kind of start the movie and then they do the intro credits, like kind of 5 minutes in, and not the very beginning. And
yeah, I mean,
just
I
the
thought,
music, and it's very much too, like Quentin Tarantino.
The
like,
actors and actresses that they pick to play these characters.
It's very similar, really, like to Django, and yeah, like very really like did. Similar to the period piece, you know. But Regina King, like, really killed it. I mean, she was really great. I've never seen her as a villain before.
Yeah, it was great to see her as really kind of a dark
She was
villain.
Scary.
And, yeah, I mean, really could take it to you.
Yeah, and I mean, when I watched Watchmen, the TV show, it kind of opened my eyes to the movie, because when I watched the movie Watchmen, I never would have... I'm not going to say anything for you guys if you've never seen it, but if you have, you guys will know what I'm saying when I say that it opened my eyes, because I never would have thought the show was the origin
was
story of the movie.
Coincidental,
yeah.
About this movie, and then you put Regina King in this movie, who is also in The Watchmen, and there is a, you know, there is a link between the two. The two do include a Bass Reeves, who is again a real Black American. He was the first Black Marshal. So, I mean, he really has history here, but he was included in the story. And, of course, he is, you know, kind
and
of
the Tulsa
a
Fires,
kind of mentioned in Watchmen as well. So
They did. Cool. I think they did mention the Tulsa Fires. They did have some accurate real events in the Watchmen show as well. The racism that happened in the 30s and all the way up until now. And, I mean, just... It was almost terrifying, because it was like, wow, what if this is the future where we have to all wear a certain mask or a certain, like, I mean, we are wearing masks now, but we're like in this kind of gang, or like we're wearing a certain type of clothing to differentiate who's bad and who's good, and then what is good and bad, because the characters, and honestly, like, I really think it was a good show, and seeing Regina King, she had some dark moments as that character, but I thought it was really good. I definitely want to watch the sequel, if they have the sequel for... It will be called Harder They Fall Again, or they'll name it something else.
Maybe that's what they'll call it, Harder They Fall Again.
The harder they fall, even harder.
Harder. This time they fall harder.
I did have go through the mail, email. I did post on our Spotify, and I asked about what was the hardest part of your job or your career. And I read several emails, and I thought that I would read this one because of, you know, the situation that we're in now with the quarantine. Who can go outside? Can we be around people still? Is it safe to, you know, go out and be out at night again, especially now since it's getting darker earlier in the day? And I kind of went through some of these emails, and I picked one that I was interested in the most because it has to do with sex work. I'm always a big supporter of people in the sex industry, even just in the industry of being a companion or being there for people emotionally. It's not always about having sex with someone. Sometimes it's just about being there for someone. And I think it's a form of healing. I think there's different types of walks of life, from OnlyFans to actually being an escort or being a stripper, or, you know, just being in that realm of, or BDSM parties, or, you know, a lot of those things have to be safe spaces. I wanted to read this email. I will leave this person's name anonymous just for safety reasons. They emailed me. They said, "This is my thoughts on what I've been thinking." So they said, "Everyone that has been in the sex work industry likes to ask questions about it. You're all curious and full of assumptions. Well, the one question I am tired of answering is the one I get most frequently, and it's not your fault and if you've been conditioned to think this way, but seriously, strip clubs customers, those that purchase the service of sex workers, are not creeps. They are regular ass people. They are your fathers, your mothers, your friends, your co-workers, your brothers, your sisters, your bosses. Most of them are total sweethearts, and it's my absolute pleasure to bring excitement, joy, and love into their lives. There's nothing weird or creepy about going to the club and buying the time of a beautiful person. I can't stand the question, 'Do you ever get creeps? Oh, what's the worst thing that a person has done to you?' Like, listen to yourself. That is so invasive, inappropriate, and fucking weird. Honestly, it hurts my feelings that my industry, which is such a beautiful, impactful, and important part of my life, is portrayed as gross, creepy by so many people that have never stepped foot in a club or a party." I think they mean sex party, but yeah. "I would much rather hang out with my sweet, generous customers than a bitch that turns up their nose at the idea that I make money by shaking my ass." Awesome, right? Yeah, what awesome. Do you think? I think it is weird if someone asks you the worst things. Like, why would you want to ask someone to visit that dark place?
We're just so conditioned, right, to think that. I mean, isn't it weird, right? Sex supposed to be pleasure and good, yet we're so conditioned
to think it's bad.
So bad and bad.
And then also, like, if I did something, like, any job, you don't want someone to ask you, what's the worst person you've dealt with? Like, no one wants to revisit that because you don't know what they've been through, number one. And number two, it's just very strange to want to talk about that with somebody. I think you should say, what do you enjoy about your work? What do you enjoy about your craft? What makes you feel the best about it? And, or, you know, how long have you been doing this? Why do you do it? Like, those are appropriate questions to ask people. And, you know, I think that I admire it. I think that, you know, people have this attitude of it being still right now being taboo. And, you know, people were going all crazy when they saw that little Nas video, you know, him like being a stripper and like going to hell and partying with the demon, with Satan. Like, it's just art, right? And people just want to find something to bitch about. So kudos to this person for sharing their experiences and sharing what they think about it, because I'm glad that they don't think that their customers are creepy. And if there's always going to be creepy people, right? In every
if you think
job.
About it, right? I mean, we think about who is creepier, right? The Roman Catholic Church, who has hid monsters, you know, abusers, pedophiles. Hid those people who are real monsters versus, you know, a brothel where people willingly go and pay, and where, you know, any other country, and well, I won't say any other country, it's not always. I mean, sometimes there are people forced into labor, but there's, you know, what did we mention? There's 20 or 27 different kinds of slavery out there, forced labor out there.
Yep.
Not every sex worker is into it. They are...
And not every...
are very empowered.
Yes.
And do it on their own.
And not every strip club is unsanitary or gross or like, you know, I mean, you just have to read the reviews on Yelp if you want to go to a strip club. You know, I mean, and that's not the stripper's fault. That's the person that owns the building. That's the person that owns the venue. That's on them. If they don't own a sanitary club or bar. But I mean, I've been plenty of places that weren't strip clubs that were, I was like, oh God, I need to leave. This is not great. You know, the chair's falling apart. Exit. Sorry, I had to say it, guys.
Yeah, we mentioned that
before. But yeah, I mean, the sex work industry has been around forever, since like humans have been around, probably the 1500s, 1600s, brothels and all of that. It's been around forever. But it's gotten better, and I think that people are getting more into it. And I've been hearing also that OnlyFans isn't just for sex work or camming. It also is for musicians. It's for artists. People share their content on there. Sometimes it's non-sexual. Sometimes it's just fun shit, like, you know, little skits or something. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of my take on it. And I'm always going to support people like that, because you know what? That's brave. That's a brave service to be in, next to being a nurse and a doctor. Like, that's fucking brave. Because you have to, like, make sure that you're safe all the time. You have to make sure your money is good.
I mean,
and you're paying your taxes and you're healthy and you're getting tested. And you know, if you're doing full contact like that, or, you know, my opinion is to have people that always know where you are all the time. Bring a friend, bring someone that you know that can, like, be nearby. If you're going to do cam stuff, make sure you got a VPN so people can't track your IP address. Like, make sure that you're safe. You don't want to have...
precautions.
Yeah, precautions. All right, we're going to cut it short today, guys. We want to tell you that we love you. We want you to stay safe and stay happy and have a good Thanksgiving. And, yeah, I'm Megan.
I'm Matt.
And you're listening to The Night Owl.
Hey, baby. Hey, baby girl. What?
Beanie, you want a treat?